Hi, I'm Steve Ladori.
And I'm Akiva Beebe.
Together, we'll be talking to leading innovation experts from across the world who are going to share how they've been keeping themselves busy during this time of disruption. That is, reinventing themselves, their teams, and their businesses at breakneck speed so that they can be ready for the new normal.
And we are here today to talk with Hernan Carranza. Hernan is the Chief Innovation Officer of a really exciting organization called Grupo Intercorp. They are based in Lima, Peru, one of, if not the largest conglomerates in South America. So it's going to be very exciting to hear from him. He is also the Chief Innovation Officer there, as well as the Managing Director of La Victoria Innovation Labs, which is going to give us a lot of exciting stuff about what he and his team are doing. Hernan's been with Intercorp since 2004, but along the way, he got a master's at the Fish School of Arts at NYU in New York City on innovation strategy. I know he's traveled in Europe and spent time there, and he's got a really interesting background, and they are doing some amazing stuff during this pandemic in the Peruvian community and connection. So, Hernan, welcome. Thanks for being here. If we could start, maybe tell us a little bit about Intercorp, because I'm pretty sure most of our audience is not familiar with it and all the things you're doing and how big and structured you are in terms of so many different businesses. So let me turn it over to you.
So Intercorp is basically a group of companies. We have our conglomerate has over 35 companies, and all of them, what they share in common is that all of them are addressing the needs of the Peruvian middle-class family, right? So if you imagine the journey of these families of Peru, of our middle class, we can help them thrive along their whole journey. Since they're born, we have clinics, we have K-12 schools, we have universities, we have supermarkets, we have drugstores, movie theaters, shopping centers, we have small bank, so we have insurance companies, so we are sort of a Peruvian Alibaba, right? We provide all of our customers with all the things that they need along their lives. Intercorp was born 23 years ago in Lima, which is the capital of Peru, and we were basically providing financial solutions to these families. And then that was sort of our first wave of business. Then after like 8 years, we started, we jumped into the retail business, and we started developing a portfolio of business offerings for Peruvian families. And we did that on the suburbs of the capital and also in some of the provinces of Peru that at that point were extremely neglected by the business community here in South America. Our third wave of business, I would say, started like 8 years ago. So it's been like 24 years so far. And like every eight years or so, we sort of have another sort of wave of business. And the latest one and the third one, I would say it's around shared value. So it's basically about doing business while doing good for the community. So we have launched all of our initiatives of education and healthcare have been launched in the last 8 years. And we've designed, our most iconic business so far is a K-12 school system that is meant to be affordable, scalable, world-class, and also, I mean, delivering world-class education and also sustainable and profitable, right? So that's a project that we started 10 years ago or 9 years ago with an innovation company called IDEO. It's based in San Francisco. And with them, we spent 6 months basically creating the whole system, right? The learning model and the business model and the operational model, all the way to the spaces and the technology behind. And right now we have 60 schools in 3 different countries in the region attending over 50,000 students.
Your span is incredible, from movie theaters to schools, to banks, to health clinics, to insurance. It's an amazing scope you have across the economy and the country.
So we basically exist to help Peru become the best place in Latin America to raise a family, right? That's our vision. We love and we work every day to accomplish that purpose, right? So as you're saying, all of our businesses, all the array of businesses that we have are always pointing to that direction. My role at Intercorp is I oversee all the innovation strategy for the conglomerate. 6 years ago, we launched our innovation lab. That's called La Victoria Lab. And we are 34 folks that are, I would say, different kind of mindset to the rest of the organization, right? So we are probably way more user-centered. We basically bring the voice of the user. We think extremely agile and iterative as opposed to having like long-term plans. We basically experiment and prototype with everything that we do. So we have this mantra that's about building to think. And we work in an extremely collaborative fashion. I guess all of the people that I've hired for La Victoria Lab have a very different background. So they're coming from very different places, not only in terms of education, but also in terms of the lives they've been living, right? They've been, most of the people that are working at La Victoria Lab are people that have been having or experiencing different journeys, living in different countries or living in completely different contexts, like in the middle of nowhere, in the Amazon jungle, stuff like that. So I'm just trying to hire people who are extremely intentional about hacking their own lives, right? Really designing their own lives. So we're a group of designers. That's the way we call ourselves. And we are basically, I would say, like hackers or like people who love to reimagine and to challenge the status quo of the, not only of the business of Intercorp, but also of the experiences that we deliver to our users. And particularly, I am very interested in people who have been able to design their own lives.
Could you just give everyone the location of where physically your innovation lab is and how you selected that location?
Sure. So Intercorp, again, it's a massive organization in Peru, right? We have over 80,000 employees all around the country. We are basically located in Peru. All our businesses and investors are Peruvian, are based in Peru. If you walk around the capital or any other city around the country, you'll probably stumble upon many of our businesses, even without noticing that, right? It's such a big conglomerate that we account for almost 4% of the Peruvian GDP. Our headquarters is located in the intersection of the two you've been here, like the two most iconic highways or expressways in the capital, right? Our headquarter building is located there. And it's a very beautiful, iconic building, right? It's been 18 years since we built it, but it's still very, it's still an icon, right? When we started like 7 years ago, one of the first discussions that I had with my boss, who is the chairman of the group, he told me, "Hey, innovation is so important that I want you to be on the 20th floor, you and your team, right? Because that's going to be a strong signal of how important and how influential I want Innovation Lab to be in the whole Intercorp, right?" And I told him, "Well, that's exactly what we don't want, right? What we need is actually the opposite. We don't want to be important. We don't want to be powerful. We actually want to be free and to be autonomous and to really be able to think outside the box, right?" So I told him, like, rather than being at the top of the like Crystal Tower, I would prefer to be probably 3 to 4 blocks away, not to be too far away from where the businesses are, but to be working in a house so that we are able to empathize a lot better with the traditional like middle class family that we are working for, so that we can learn from them, we can be empathetic with them, we can be with them, right? Also, as a second benefit of working in a middle class house is the team feels like a family, right? And they are able to, we are a lot more closer. We're able to interact a lot. Well, not in these times, but the last 7 years it's been that way. There are a lot of random encounters. There are a lot of like a family vibe and like a tribe vibe. But I think it's quite strong for collaboration, which is at the cornerstone of what we do, and to develop trust, right, between the labbers. So, I personally didn't foresee that coming. I think that's something that has happened, right? But I guess we really nailed it, because my team, even though it's very small compared to, 33 folks compared to the 80,000 at Intercorp, I guess we have been able to create a very high degree of influence within the whole conglomerate, right? And again, I don't think it's about the quantity of people. I think it's about the quality of the ideas. And when you feel that you are a unit or a family, the trust that you can create, it's a lot stronger, right? So yeah, we've been working in this house, and I guess so far, so good.
I'd like to move a little bit closer to the present and the pandemic and how we've all been disrupted. Could you told me the story the other day about trying to get a distribution of cash, funding to the community, to your countrymen, and the fact that so many are unbanked in there. Could you tell us a little bit of the story of, what did your team do? Something about, you stopped all things and said, oh my God, what do we got to do right now? Could you talk to us a little bit about what I think you've called branded Tunky and how that has actually been helping with the distribution of funds during the pandemic, right now?
There's two different things, right? The first one is all the things that we have been doing in the last 2 to 3 years that have been helping us to be, to be fit for this context, right? So we have sort of been training for something like this. We didn't know this was going to happen, but I guess we have been training quite a lot for something like this. And I guess somehow La Victoria Lab has become sort of the vaccine or the immunological system for the whole intergroup, because we have been injecting this, way of working and like digital delivery and design mindset and all these things that we have been injecting all these mindsets and skill sets and tools into our leaders again during the last 4 years very aggressively, right? So it's not an assumption or hypothesis anymore. I think the fact that we have been able to react as a group, not as a group of designers, but as a whole group, so quickly, is something that is helping us quite a lot to move extremely, extremely fast. So that's the first thing, and I can share a bit of details there. The second thing are how La Victoria Lab, that's called LVL internally, has been able to pivot our whole portfolio for the future, right? I can spend time there as well. First is what you're saying, like Tunky. Tunky is a payments app that we launched like a year and a half ago with our bank. When the whole COVID thing exploded here in Peru by mid-March, we were the only bank that was able to deliver or to open a bank account 100% online, right? And that combined with Tunky, which is one of the other three payment platforms that are popular around the country, that made the government of Peru officially choose Tunky as the official way to distribute all the subsidies that they were giving to the families. Our role was to pioneer the digital transformation and digital delivery of products that we started by the end of 2015, right? So we've been 4 years and a bit more building dozens of digital products. So we know how to do that, right? And the backlog of this product called Tunky, we have been able to ship literally 12 months in 14 days, right? Because we knew how to do that. Very similar. We also, as I mentioned before, we own a network of schools. And again, right, in only 2 weeks, we were able to put all the content into the cloud and then into the tablets and the computers of students on a way that we couldn't have been able to do if we wouldn't have been training for this moment, right? So again, also the leadership, and there were a bunch of areas and groups within Innova Schools, that's the name of the company, that knew how to do that, right? Of course, they were probably doing it with a sense of urgency that everybody in the planet was working before COVID, right? But then when the whole COVID arrived, they were able to do this like literally in 14 days. So they started 1 week before the lockdown, which meant that only 1 week after the lockdown, 50,000 students in Peru were able to attend classes online for only $120, which is what we charge for them for each kid for each month, right? So again, I guess those couple of examples are great stories of how we were ready, right? I can imagine our competitors or other organizations in the planet. Probably they didn't have this sort of vaccine to be ready for the future, and they must have been struggling quite a lot because they were not exercising that muscle with 3 or 4 years of time beforehand, right? When it comes to the second part of your question about how we've been able to pivot our portfolio, you know, La Victoria Lab we've always had a mandate of focusing on the future. I would say 4 to 5 years horizon time, right? To be ready for the future, to pioneer with all the things that are emerging, both on process and on content or product or strategy, right? So to really help our companies be way more future ready or future proof than our competitors, both traditional and emergent competitors are. I guess when the whole thing happened, again, like 2.5 months here in Peru, what I did was, I guess we were like a couple of days on denial mode. And then on Wednesday that week, we said something like, let's stop working, right? Let's not continue working on the same things that we were working before this disruption. I guess that was quite radical. And most of the leaders of my team were like, are you nuts? Like, we've been working in these projects like for a few months already. Like, why are we going to stop all this? Like, because it doesn't make sense anymore. And we need to be as responsive as possible to the new context, right? I mean, in that moment, honestly, I was not sure about what I was doing. I don't think there is any sort of toolkit that can help leaders respond on this sort of crisis. But I guess something that I've always said is that it's a lot better to overinvest time on this, on defining what to do, and then to probably underinvest a little bit of time on the doing of that thing, right? I think most of the innovation labs and humans around the planet tend to overinvest their energy on executing the plan and underinvest. And I actually think on that even as a personal level, right? Like, when you go on vacation with your wife, you probably invest a couple of hours defining the destination, and then you invest a week or two traveling, right? I have a little bit of a different philosophy. I think it's a lot better to invest probably as much time as you invest traveling in planning, because then you will probably choose the right destination and the right hotels and the right place and the right restaurants. So I think it's very similar here, right? I said, let's stop for a couple of weeks. Let's do nothing, at least the leadership of the lab, right? And then really choose what we want to do for the future, right? We sort of developed a new framework for all the initiatives that we were going to be doing in the COVID times and probably after. We moved our time horizon, not for the next 5 years, but for the next, I would say, 12 months. So we're focusing on what we are calling locally the early recovery phase, which is, we have this framework that we talk about, the now, the near, and the far, right? So our hypothesis is the far can wait a little bit. The now cannot wait. And all our business executives, yep, are focusing on the now. They're like fire workers, right? They're literally throwing water into the fire right now. What we can do and what we are really best at doing is invest time now to harvest on the near, which is in 12 months. So we have a lot of early signals of how the habits and the behaviors of our consumers are going to change in the next 6 to 12 months. And with those early signals, we can start building products for them, for our users to consume in 6 to 12 months, right? I think a great example of that one is telemedicine or telehealthcare. So, that first or second week after the COVID exploded here in Peru, we started building a telemedicine product that we launched a couple of weeks ago. Not only because all the consumers were in their houses having some healthcare needs, but also because the doctors were in their houses, locked down, and also because the regulation started to relax a lot more, right? So it was like the perfect storm to start building a product that has never been around in Peru, and we are lucky to have hospitals and drugstores that can provide us with a very strong unfair advantage for to build that product, right? Because we have over 2,200 drugstores all around the country that are the largest healthcare network in terms of reach. And we also have the protocols, and we also have from the clinics, and we also have some of the doctors and advisors. So we have a lot of things. So we just spend time again, like designing the plan, and then we started building, as opposed to just keep working so that there is like an illusion of progress. But I guess progress and velocity are important, but even more important is to have the right direction, right?
In terms of sort of investing and developing a very different leadership muscle, the fact that you got them ready for these kind of radical changes and be able to pivot in this kind of market, right? And given that you are a very large corporate, but it sounds like you've developed a whole cadre of, senior executives who already have a very strong, what we call corporate entrepreneurial mindset, So I'd love to hear how you did that.
That's a great question. And look, I've been around for 6.5 years, and that was our biggest challenge, I would say. And every time people ask me or people interview me and say, like, hey, what would be the one thing you'd like to change if you have like a mic one? And I usually said the leadership mindset, right? We've been calling that project or that opportunity leadership internally, right? That's a code name. And I guess we've been trying different ways to approach the opportunity, right? And if there's one that I think has worked, I would say has moved 80% the needle, I would say it was something that we did a year and a half ago, right? So after Christmas, we have our summertime here, opposite to the Northern Hemisphere. So we had this idea. So we started the digital transformation program officially on January of 2016. Right. Basically, our mantras were strategy is delivery, show the thing meaning the product, right? Like literally don't get ready, get started, build something, right? And it worked quite well. We started building something ourselves that was called the Beacon. That was, again, another code name internally. A Beacon is a digital service or a digital product that was competing with your company on a digital fashion. And that helped your organization to acquire a new capability, right? That was sort of the definition of, and of course it was extremely user-centric. It was attending a pressing user need. That is what we define the Beacon internally. And we create a very strong movement about building beacons, right? We made a competition. We create a lot of fear of missing out, like FOMO effect. And all the leaders of the business units was like, I want my beacon, I want to have a couple of beacons. Everybody was sort of competing to have beacons. And beacons were basically, again, digital services that were competing with their core offerings, right? After a couple of years, we noticed that we were able to build over 80 beacons, which is quite a lot. I mean, one beacon is a startup, is an internal startup, right? But then by the end of 2018, right, a year and a half ago, our chairman, we have every 2 months, we have a meeting with top 5 execs of the whole Intercorp and La Victoria Lab to keep having updates on the digital transformation journey, right? And by the end of, I remember it was like October of 2018, this guy says something like, I'm really happy about all the activity that is going around with the beacons. Like, honestly, in 18 to 24 months, we have progressed way more than in the previous 10 years, right? But I have the feeling, that's what he said, that we are a little bit like headless, right? Like we are building a lot of things, but we are not necessarily aligned on what's the direction that we want our conglomerate and our industries to move. So he asked us to help him with that journey. And after a few weeks of, again, like planning, right? And stopping the ball for a while before keeping the play, we said, and we spent literally 3 weeks in Cambridge, because we work very closely with IDEO. they are the best when it comes to future design or to like design fiction or like imagining how the future could look like, right? So we spent 3 weeks there and we came back to Lima with this idea of what if we organize through platforms, right? So we have 4 platforms: education, healthcare, financial services, and retail. And then you, Carlos, assign. Carlos is the chairman, like a head of platform. So who's going to be leading each of the 4? Like, it's not a business anymore; it's like a group of businesses. And then each of these 4 persons, they need to write a letter to themselves, right? To the version of themselves of 2024. It was 5 years looking forward, right? Why a letter? Because a letter is not only very easy to consume and to edit, but it's particularly easy to produce, right? So our idea that was widely accepted was, what if each of these leaders surround themselves by 6 to 7 people that are very different between themselves? So we said it has to be 2 people below 30, at least 2 women and stuff like that, so that it looked a little bit more diverse as opposed to just the usual suspects. And then they started on a journey of 4 months from December to April. It was 4.5 months of designing their future, right? So I think the beauty of this is going to come here, right? Like, they didn't only, fast forward to April, they didn't only just share outstanding vision and super emotional and concrete for each of their platforms, but also the process of writing that letter was amazing. They started adopting, without necessarily knowing, that they were embracing creative behaviors, such as, for instance, looking out. We have a list of 6 creative behaviors that we have been pushing since 2015, that we co-created with IDEO. There's a division of IDEO called Creative Difference. So if you Google that, like Creative Difference IDEO in Google, you'll find the 6 dimensions of creativity, which are sort of the 6 traits of creativity that businesses should have in order to create the conditions in order to be continuously creative, right? And in April, after they delivered, after this 4-month journey, and then delivered their vision letters, we sort of went through these 6 dimensions and we were like, oh, wow, the 6 of them have been ticked, right? And I guess looking out, I'm going to read them very quickly. One is purpose. Looking out is the second one. Third one is collaboration. 4th is experimentation. 5 is empowerment. And 6 is refinement or continuous refinement, right? All of the 6 were heavily embraced by our leaders. And again, it was like, we're like 6 to 8 leaders per platform. That's around like 50 people in the room, or I would say actually like 50 people in the journey of 4 months, literally putting together and articulating in 1.5 page maximum what your future was going to look like. So it was like, for instance, the head of education is Jorge, was like, dear Jorge of 2024. It was like, this is happening today. This happened a year ago. So it was looking at the past, right? They were able to imagine the future. They were able to look out quite a lot. Each of the groups did like, I would say 3 to 4 trips during that summer to India, China, actually several trips to China, the West Coast, the East Coast, Brazil, Mexico. So they articulated the purpose for the platforms. They collaborated quite strongly with all their other leaders. And they empowered them. And then they refined this letter again. We did that literally a year before COVID. We finished that journey. And that has put us on a very comfortable position of having invested the right time and energy with the right people at the right time, probably because we didn't know the virus was coming, on really setting up the direction. Last week, we read those letters again with the whole group, and it was like, wow, this is still 80% valid. It's just that the speed of delivery has changed quite a lot, but the direction in most cases it's still the same, which again puts us on an unfair advantage because we were able to travel the world and imagine the future for 4 months a year ago.
So, and I guess that leads us to the question around, you know, how you're using this new muscle, this, you know, your beacons, you know, for sort of creative differences in this market, this post-COVID market where everything's accelerated. So, you know, what, like, how are you applying that? What does that look like?
Sorry.
I mean, just to build on that, right? How will you, the fact that it's 80% applicable? Great story on you know, how you've influenced leadership to change. So as you look forward, how is this going to continue? How do you see things changing? You know, in the new normal, whatever that is. What challenges do you see for your leader for your involvement with leadership and your team's journey?
Challenge number one would be to be able, I mean, for the business leads, to be able to combine the right share of energy between the present and the future. I guess we are still 99% in the present because of the fire. I mean, what I call the fire, right? Which is like, how do we keep running our businesses with so many new restrictions? And of course, the businesses are not doing as well as they were doing before. The other challenge that I think it's quite important for us is to sort of refine the directions of these visions, being continuously informed by the habits that are changing, right? And I guess nobody knows which habits are going to stick and which habits are going to go back to. And I think right now we need to start thinking on having like weekly conversations on how are these directions going to change, right? Because, for instance, in retail, I personally have this hypothesis that the one thing that was not in that letter a year ago is proximity. I'm not sure how things are working in other countries, but in Peru, proximity is something very new and extremely important, right? Like, I guess 3-4 months ago, we didn't really care about that. We care about price, we care about convenience, about like speed, but not about proximity, right? And right now, because of these restrictions, people just are creating strong relationships with their corner shops, right? So the corner shops were losing market very strongly and very systemically during the last sort of decade here. And in 3 months, they have become again like super important, right? So that is just one single example. I don't know if this is going to stay or this is going to go. So we don't know. But I guess the second challenge is to combine the signals from other markets, the early signals from our market, and a little bit of intuition and imagination to be able to say, okay, we're going to put extra effort here, right? Because this is going to be huge. I guess whoever is able to do that better than competitors is the one that's going to capture that 10 or 20% of the market, or maybe at the beginning it's going to be 5%. Yeah. But then that's going to keep changing and changing. It's going to be eventually 50%, right? So I guess that's a little bit of the second challenge. And I guess that's a challenge for every single business, not just for us.
The first thing I took away, and I'm just still reflecting back on our corporate entrepreneur community visit to you, is all the training that you've done. I mean, I think you used the phrase, you know, you were training for this moment, but you didn't know you were training for this moment. And, you know, and stuff that, you know, normally would have taken, you know, 2 months, you got done in, or 2 years rather, maybe you got done in 2 weeks, which is just, it shows the value of your training. And I would just build on that by saying that the fact that you had the vision and the insight to physically move your innovation team into the neighborhood where your target market is located for all the businesses. I just think it's just a, you know, just an incredible best practice that I hope other people can take away. In terms of then what you did, I mean, I just remember you saying emphatically, like, we had to stop everything. I mean, that's the next thing I took away. Stop everything. What do we have to pivot? What do we have to change? I mean, the fact that, you know, you use the term fire, and, you know, 99% of what you had to worry about was right now, I think was an awesome thing to do. Yeah, and from that, I see the things like, you know, telemedicine, the funding transfers that you got, now worrying about proximity. I mean, I think all the, you know, your three-tier approach of what do we have to do now, what do we have to do near, and what do we have to do far is going to pay big dividends. And I agree from what I'm hearing with most people is, you know, maybe we were supposed to be working on 3 to 5 years before all this happened, but we now have to focus probably 99% on the present and the near, and what's going to be the near coming out of this, because there are going to be winners and losers. And obviously we want all our firms to be winners, but we also want the communities that we live in to be winners. You know, you're doing a tremendous amount to help the middle class there. And I think that's really, really, really just very, very commendable. And then to me, the value of what you did with Beacons, getting this new leadership muscle, the fact that you also had the insight to say, you know, hey, leaders, we not only want you to write this letter, but we want you to write this letter by building a diverse team of thinkers around it so that you're incorporating that in. I hope other people will take that as a best example. And then you had the vision to go do it 18 months ago, but then you also had the knowledge right now to say, is it still relevant given everything that's going on, and reviewing it right now. So I think that's a really, really important thing to think about, that, you know, you have to change and you can now sort out what's going to happen going forward and what are the new things you need to invest in, the new habits you mentioned. You're going to have new habits in your organization, new habits with leadership, and you're going to have new habits with your, with all your consumers. Hernan, thank you very much for helping us out.
So come join the movement. Find us at bit.ly/disrupted today.